see.
Rich Friedman with Pfizer, part of the BC.
Sanjeev Sarwate from Dell, I'm a member of the IPC.
Esteban Lescano from Cavase, Argentina, ISPC.
Jennifer Taylor Hodges from BT, part of the ISPCP.
Akin Maimura, JPNIC for ISPCP.
Osvaldo Novoa from Antel Uruguay, ISPCP.
Olivier Miron from Orange, ISPCP.
Izumi Akutani, JPNIC from ISPCP.
And Paul Mitchell from Microsoft.
Pedro Infort, International Federation of Intellectual Property Attorneys, IPC.
Claudia Salietti, TBC.
Cheryl Miller, Verizon, BC.
Steve.
Tony Harris, Cavase, Argentina, with the ISPCP.
Tony Holmes, representing BT and chair of the ISPs.
Christina Rosette, IPC president.
Marilyn Cade, BC, CSG officer.
Elisa Cooper, chair of the BC, representing Thomson Reuters.
Susan Kawaguchi, Facebook, BC.
Sasha Tarrant, National Basketball Association, BC.
Jimson Olufuye, Africa ICT Alliance, BC.
Anne Aikman, Scalise, Lewis, Rucker, Rothgarber, IPC.
I'm J. Scott Evans from Adobe Systems. I'm also president-elect of the International Trademark Association.
Kat McGowan, LinkedIn, IPC and BC.
John McElwain, Nelson Mullins, also here representing International Trademark Association, IPC.
Mark Trachtenberg with Greenberg Traurig, IPC.
Greg Shatton, IPC.
Camille Stewart, Civalence, BC.
I'm Chaitanya Ramachandran. I'm an ICANN fellow.
Steve DelBianco, NetChoice, and policy coordinator for the BC.
Jim Baskin, Verizon, BC.
Michael Adams, IPC treasurer.
Stacy Foltz, Winston & Strawn, IPC.
Oliver Zume, European Internet Service Provider Association and member of ISPCP.
Luca Barbero, Studio Barbero, member of IPC.
Steve Mace with the National Cable and Telecommunications Association.
Patrick Jones, ICANN staff and invited participant to ESSAC.
Val Sherman, Silverberg, Goldman, and Bykoff, IPC.
Griffin Barnett, Silverberg, Goldman, and Bykoff, IPC.
Carolyn Wynn, Microsoft.
Beth Allegretti, Fox Entertainment Group.
Brian Beckham, World Intellectual Property Organization.
Mary Jo Kuklar, Name Administration, BC.
David Einhorn, representative of the IPO to the IPC.
Carlton Sugram, the Bankers Association.
David McGuire, 463 Communication.
The folks sitting in the chairs on the side, I don't know if you want to come up to the table.
Mike Regan, 21st Century Fox.
Brett Carr, ICANN staff. нас слухають. Це. Is there anybody else we missed?
Sorry, Fellowship. Omar Ansari, Fellowship PC.
Good morning. This is Osama Tamimi, ICANN Fellow from Palestine.
Russ Pangborn from Marksman, Seattle.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone. Before we get started, I have asked Alisa Cooper, the BC, to provide an update of a rather short but I think very productive meeting that was held last night, convened last night by Fadi and David Olive and Sally Costerton, to which the leaders of the GNSO, SGs, and constituencies were invited. Alisa?
Thanks, Christina. So the purpose of this session that we had last night with the leaders from the community and with the leaders of staff was really for staff to hear from us how they might be able to help us work more efficiently. And so there were a number of suggestions, and some of the big takeaways from the meeting were as follows. One, there were a number of requests to limit the number of concurrent comment periods that are open at any one time. I had suggested no more than 4 to 5. There was a suggestion for 6. At any rate, the idea was that having all of these open comment periods is overwhelming and we're not able to respond. There was also a request that Fadi provide to the leaders an agenda prior to his monthly meetings. You know, we have these monthly meetings for the leaders to meet with Fadi. And we often go into that meeting not knowing sort of what he would like to discuss. What we ultimately decided was that we would work together to come up with a joint agenda so I can and the other constituency leaders can get feedback from our respective groups, tell him what we'd like to talk about, also learn what he wants to discuss with us so that we don't go into those meetings just listening to Fadi talk and not being able to bring our different perspectives. There was also a request that staff develop a better way for us to all understand the progress of the different working groups that are currently open at any one time. I think that anyone coming into the ICANN community would have a very difficult time understanding what the open working groups are, what the status is, where they are in the process, and so there was a request for our staff to assist in putting those materials together. Then finally, we brought to Fadi and staff's attention the fact that the CSG in particular has an issue when there are requests made of the CSG as opposed to the different constituencies. And we explained to them that we often spend a lot of time going back and forth amongst us to determine things like, well, who should sit on a particular panel or who should be our representative? And then we have to go back and then work with that representative to make sure that our concerns are all represented, when in fact, while we do oftentimes agree with one another, there are many cases where we have very different perspectives. And we brought that to him in sort of a very educational fashion, and it was not combative. And I think he really understood it, and he took it in. And there didn't really seem to be a lot of pushback from any of the other community leaders as well. So he's already heard that message, and I know we want to kind of describe to the board before we meet with them just a little bit about who we are. So I think, again, if we take just a very sort of educational approach and not be combative or hostile in any way, I think that'll go a long way to helping them understand why we need to be treated separately, why it's difficult for us to be treated as just one particular group together. So that was, I think, you know, the highlights of that meeting. I don't know if there was anything, Tony or Christina, you would add.
The only thing I would add is that it's my understanding that we will be receiving kind of a meeting summary that we'll be able to distribute to you, and that we should at some point in the not too distant future get a response back in terms of the request regarding limitation of the number of concurrent public comment periods, how staff intends to address the unanimous request for these kind of working group snapshots. And obviously, we'll be sure to feed those back to our respective constituencies once we get those. We do have 5 probably 5 to 7 minutes before the ESSEC folks are here and ready to go. So I don't know if there are any issues that folks want to raise, or we want to get started on trying to get a little board prep in. What do folks want to do?
It's Marilyn. If we could start with board prep.
As an outcome of our meeting on Sunday afternoon, we identified the two topics that we would be discussing with the board. The one relating to the ICANN structures and their impact on non-contracted business interests. We had agreed that there would be three leaders on those topics, and I believe it was going to be Steve Metallitz for IPC, Tony Holmes for ISPs, and Elisa Cooper for BC. The other topic that we had identified to the board is ICANN accountability, and obviously the conversation that we're going to have with them is, I think, somewhat different than it would have been if we'd had it a week ago. And if anyone, what I was planning to do is introduce the topic and then, you know, as with the other topic, take comments and interventions from members of the CSG constituencies. The one thing that I wanted to note is that when we did meet with Bruce and Bill on Sunday morning, Bruce had indicated that the board would be taking up and acting on this week kind of the open action item from the revised accountability proposal, namely what the board would do with the input that it received, or the output, rather, of the cross-community working group. To my knowledge, that decision has not yet been reached, or if it has, it hasn't been communicated. I don't know whether anyone has any other information on that at this point. But if it's still an open item, then I think we definitely need to ensure that we emphasize the importance of that. I see Steve DelBianco. Anyone else want to speak on this? Steve, go ahead.
Thanks, Christina. Steve DelBianco with NetChoice. I did ask Bruce Tonkin, since he was anxious to have us withdraw the reconsideration request, and that was sort of prompting this discussion, and we were waiting to see the board's plan for what it would do with the recommendations coming out of the working group. And Bruce said that they're very close, but they're putting up some fine-tuned language. We won't be surprised about it. It will look a lot like the bylaws treatment of consensus advice when it reaches the board. In other words, a high threshold to reject, accompanied with a lot of descriptions and rationale, active consultation. So we shouldn't be surprised. It's not likely to be much different than the way they deal with community advice today. But none of that's confirmed. We don't have text yet. We was promised that we would get it this week, and I still expect that we will.
Anyone else want to speak on this? No one? Okay, well, let's talk very briefly then about the issues that we want to make sure are covered in the intro to the accountability topic. You know, we had a fairly wide-ranging discussion on Sunday morning, and I think it would be helpful for me if we could kind of recap those a little bit more crisply. Anyone want to get in the queue on that? I see Steve DelBianco. All right, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, Christina, any intro on the accountability, this is a board session that we're at, but it's really the staff about which we are speaking. So we would want to suggest that the staff, well, sort of save the board from having to answer our reconsideration request. As you recall, the key to the reconsideration request was that staff had, well, it largely ignored community input all summer long with the plan they came up with the dual structure and the outside experts. What we got on Friday was a plan that said, staff said, okay, we get it. We're going to allow the community to have a cross-community working group. You get to develop your own charter with board input, but the board doesn't have to approve it. The outside experts don't get to affect consensus in the process. And there was a suggestion, and merely that, a suggestion to use two streams, one for things that have to be done before the transition of the IANA contract and everything else after. For all of those things, we express to management, not the board, we express to management that we're grateful, while perhaps implying that management came around on this partly from pressure exerted by the board, particularly at Istanbul. So we then turned to the board, who didn't have to approve that management plan. That was a management proposal to us, and the board did not approve it. They didn't need to. So at this point, we turn to the board and discuss how will they react to the recommendations that come back if they're tough recommendations. And this discussion began yesterday. I think it was Jonathan Zook brought it up at the microphone with Larry Strickling, and Larry's statement was, there won't be any rejection of the plan because obviously you're going to work together with the board to achieve a true consensus that includes the community and the board. And that might be wishful thinking, because if the accountability mechanisms are particularly tough, there may be elements of the board that won't want to accept it, particularly on advice of the general counsel. So I think we'll try to tease out from the board what their thinking is on how they might react to what comes back. And sometimes it's much more constructive to deal with specifics than it is to deal with abstracts. And I realize this whole CSG has not commented on this, but the BC back in May put in 6 quick elements that would constitute accountability that the BC suggested. And you guys have all seen those before. The most extreme of the 6 was the notion of spilling the board, dumping the entire board. And what do you know, Larry Strickling brought that up yesterday as an example of an accountability mechanism he thought might be appropriate before the transition's over. So, and that's the hardest one we asked for. The others are quite easy. So with only that kind of an introduction, I guess I've exceeded the part that would be the introduction. The introduction is thanking the board for whatever influence they had on getting the staff to turn around on this completely and opening the door for a process that's community-led. And then there's this one little thing about how do we move forward on the recommendations. And if you wish, I'd be happy to recap those BC recommendations to see if they want to react to them then.
Thank you, Steve. I see Steve, Jonathan, Marilyn. I'm just going to intervene very quickly to say that because the request for reconsideration was not a CSG request, I would prefer that any reference to that or specific points about that be made by the members of the constituencies who did support it, and also with regard to the BC point. So certainly we can go that route.
I don't believe it's necessary to mention the reconsideration. Okay. At all.
All right. The other point that I was hoping we could do is also take a slightly broader view of accountability so that we can sweep in some of the compliance issues that are always of a concern to this stakeholder group. And with that, I'll hand over to Steve.
This is Steve Metalitz. I was actually going to preview the other topic. So if the other folks in the queue were addressing the accountability topic, I'm glad to defer.
Jonathan Zook from ACT. I guess if we're introing this topic on accountability, I think it might be worth mentioning to the board that the hardest thing on the list, as Steve mentioned, which is, you know, potentially the ability to overrule the board, is the one thing that really needs to be in the initial phase. If there are two streams, if we kind of concede to that structure of two streams, it's that hardest conversation, but potentially maybe simplest structure, but that needs to be part of that initial stream, because that's what will empower the community to carry this reform effort beyond the IANA transition. And I think that's probably the most significant point, is that, you know, we need something just really simple, which is the ultimate ability to carry this reform forward past the IANA transition, and that means that the hardest reform will probably come first.
Thank you, Jonathan. I had Marilyn and then Tony Holmes, and I see that the folks from the SSAC are here. So actually, maybe if we could, Marilyn, if you could speak very briefly, because I know the SSAC folks have a really tight schedule, so I'd like to keep on time.
Marilyn Cade, I agree that we would not be discussing the reconsideration request, but I think it's important for us in this room to understand that what had the impact on influencing the board was the joint letters that were cross-community letters, the reconsideration request, which reinforced the fact that this is a joint concern, and the town hall at the IGF, where there were very strong, even though there was indications of change, there were strong statements from a wide number of the community, including the ASO reps and the root servers, expressing very strong concern. I'm not suggesting we take it up, but I think we need to analyze how much it took to convince the board, to convince the senior staff and the CEO, and factor that into our own discussions later.
Thanks, Marilyn. I think I've captured a note of who was still in the queue, so we will revert to this topic. But at this point, I'd like to turn the floor over to Patrick Falstam, chair of the ESSAC, who is going to be talking with us about some of the ESSAC's most recent activities. I believe we've gotten a current presentation that has hopefully been uploaded in Adobe. And in the meantime, I guess, is there anyone who's dialed in? Okay, I guess not. Patrick, why don't I kick it off, hand off to you? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have the slides or? Okay, so let's start talking while the slides are loading. So thank you very much for inviting us. We are the Security and Stability Advisory Committee of ICANN, ESSAC. In this room, it's myself, Patrick Falstam, chair, Jim Galvin, vice chair, and then I have a number of other ESSAC people in the room. I'm going to give a little bit an update of where we are and what we have done lately. The timing you see here is the timing for a one-hour meeting, so you understand approximately what we are thinking of spending time on. We're not going to. We have 30 minutes here, so. But anyway, so first a brief update of who we are. We're going to talk about the ANA function stewardship transition, what we have done so far, and also future work items. And one thing that we specifically at this meeting are interested in knowing at the meeting or afterwards is input from you that we can use when we are prioritizing our work. Next slide. So we initiated our work in 2001, began operation 2002. We provide guidance to the board, to supporting organization, AC staff, and the general community. And the charter is to advise ICANN community and board on matters related to the security and integrity of the internet's naming and address allocation systems. So it's not related to DNS, although, of course, like a lot of the discussion have been related to the DNS lately. I am the chair, Jim Galvin, vice chair. Both of us were re-elected to three-year terms beginning in 2015. Ram Mohan, liaison to the board, his term ends on last of December 2015. We have 40 members at the moment, and they're appointed by ICANN board for three-year terms, and we review approximately one-third of the membership every year. So what we have done lately is that we have published two reports since London, SAC 67 on August 14 and SAC 68 October 13, and both of them are descriptions are related to the IANA functions. SAC 67 is an overview and history of the IANA functions, while SAC 68, which we, as you see, released yesterday, is a report on the IANA functions contract. Because, as some of you that have been looking at the contract understand, not many people in the world actually have read the contract, which are multiple hundreds of pages. We have. So you can have a look at that. None of these two documents do include any recommendations from ESSAC, but I will be back to that. Then we have commented on the risk for namespace collisions and also DDoS attacks using the DNS infrastructure and search list processing. Next slide, please. Is there any generic questions on ESSAC? Okay. In that case, let's move into the IANA function stewardship transition. Most people are aware of the U.S. Commerce Department's announcement on the 14th of March that they are going to transition out of its current role, and that the NTIA called on ICANN to convene global stakeholders to develop a proposal on that takes care of the transition. Next slide, please. So one of the issues here, of course, is the term Ayana that is that has been used for many different things. And this technical team inside ICANN, if we now use that definition, is performing a set of tasks that involve administration and coordination of many of the identifiers. Next slide, please. So the Ayana functions are described in a couple of places. And for example, in the current contract, the functions include the root zone management, the internet, the IP address registry management, protocol parameters registry management, including the .ARPA TLD, and management of .INT. Next slide, please. So SAC 67 establishes a baseline for understanding all of those systems and how these identifiers, how that is working. It's describing the activities that are included in the Ayana functions contract and the functions performed under the IETF MOU and all other instructions to Ayana that we have been able to find. The report focuses, though, on the functions that are related to the contract and describes all the other activities that we have been able to find that that also are currently performed, including those that lies outside of the Ayana functions contract. So SAC 67 talks about what the Ayana team at ICANN really is doing. Next slide, please. And then we have SAC 68 that we released yesterday. Compared to SAC 67, SAC 68 is looking at the contract itself and documents and provides an overview over those functions of Ayana. So SAC 67 starts with Ayana and look at what functions are performed, and SAC 68 is starting with the contract to look at the various things that are covered by the contract. So by reading 67 and 68, it should be possible for the reader to sort of see the differences and based on those differences, also come up with a more informed suggestions on how to perform the transition. What we also are doing, go back one slide, please. Can we go back one slide? Thank you. The other thing that we are doing in SAC 68 is that we are documenting explicitly the role that NTIA currently is playing with respect to the Ayana functions that are based on the current public contractual information. So there are like multiple subsets of functions here. So we're also trying to specifically drill down into the functions where NTIA is currently playing. Next slide, please. So there are a couple of matrices like this one in the report, and they are looking at the specific Ayana function. They are looking at who are the involved parties, and then they are talking. We are specifically looking at what the NTIA role is compared to the other parties' roles. So we are looking at, for example, the DNS root zone management, the internet numbers registry management, protocol parameter registry management, .ARPA and .INT management, etc. Next slide, please. So if we then specifically look at the NTIA and root zone management, because this is the only function where we see that NTIA do have an active role in the management itself, we see that the administrator, which is NTIA, is part of the chain of authorization of changes in the triangle between the Ayana functions operator, the root zone maintainer, and the administrator. Next slide, please. So neither of these two include any recommendations from ESSAC. They are really trying to be descriptions of the current situation. A third document that we are currently working on includes ESSAC recommendations. And these are recommendations based on very much principles that we in ESSAC think that a system where you do have a policy development process, that is developing a policy that is then handed over to a policy implementer, how that is to set up in a way so that and so that the process itself is secure, stable, and robust. Is there any questions on that? Tony.
Thanks, Patrick. In the future document that you're going to publish, the one you refer to, you mentioned that you're going to address the principles. And within the other documents, you've already looked at those as separate functions, which clearly you can do. Is it the intent that the set of principles that you will be putting forward will embrace all of those, or will you look at each function, and is there likely to be any difference between the principles adopted for each of those?
Only the future can tell. I think the ESSAC view at the moment is that it is really important that the process that NTA requested ICANN to perform is run according to what the intention is, that the actual, the various groups for names, number, the various operational communities for names, numbers, and protocol parameters, that they're able to come up with their respective proposals and submit that to the coordination group for delivery to NTIA. I think from ESSAC perspective, what we are trying to do is to, excuse me, to come up with more general principles, more like a checklist that we think that the involved parties should think about. We do not feel, just like for example, the PDPs in GNSO and CCNSO, yes, we can come with some specific recommendation in some very specific cases, but otherwise it's really important that the various PDPs are run and improved by themselves, because we, in general, of course, we are trusting the various processes we have here. Please.
Thanks, Patrick. Steve Del Bianco with the BC. I'm anxious to read 68 as well as the new advisory, and in particular the table that you'll put together that maps the detailed elements of that IANA functions contract, all the different places and roles that NTIA has. And that will be so essential, I think, for the IANA stewardship transition streams. But I wanted to give you some appreciation of the fact that while we'll read it eagerly with respect to the IANA transition, on the general accountability question, we probably won't constrain ourselves to looking for accountability mechanisms that map to each of those roles that NTIA plays. We will tend to look at the IANA contract is really just a big sheet of paper that the Secretary of Commerce signs. And as such, it represents leverage to get the accountability mechanisms over ICANN at large that we need. And I think we're very close to having a sort of a universal acceptance that that's the role the IANA contract plays on the general ICANN accountability, whereas we need the specifics that you're developing for the IANA stewardship elements and functions. So it's going to play a great role. I just wouldn't want you to be surprised that we wouldn't necessarily map our accountability to something that exists in the contract.
I think, first of all, I hope that our document, SAC 68, is helping you finding, drawing conclusions from the current contractual situation. Let me phrase it that way. The contractual situation is quite complicated, as we discovered when we went through all the paperwork that exists, because the contract itself includes the call for tender from NTIA. You have the response from ICANN that is sort of tagged on to the ends up being the contract altogether, both of those. And then it has been amended a few times. So you have a couple of amendments. And then, as we describe in SEC 67, you have IANA performing things in a certain way that, of course, have evolved over time for good or maybe for bad reasons. And this means that if you read SEC 67 on what IANA is doing, if you read the various parts of the contract that together creates the contract, if you look at the details, of course you will find ambiguities and things that are conflicting in the text itself. And this is sort of part of the problem. Because of this, when you read SAC 68, I encourage you, even though you read the text that we have in our paper, might not be something that you agree with. We have tried to have very explicit references into the contract itself on what text we are talking about, which means that if nothing else, we hope that SAC 68 can be a way for you to more quickly dive into the portions of this, I think, 380-page document that you otherwise would not read, so you can concentrate on reading the details that you're actually interested in. Now, the second thing you're talking about is accountability. As people in this room probably know, there is now launching a cross-constituency working group, cross-community working group, whatever. We always discuss what the acronym stands for. I'm sorry for being sloppy words here. But anyways, it's more important that the process is now started. What we in SAC have been looking at is only things related to the INS stewardship transition, not accountability, the more general accountability situation. We do know, just like everyone else, that we do have the affirmation of commitment and a lot of other kind of things that we have. And so this is not to be extrapolated to be anything that has to do with the general accountability situation. Just want to make that clear. Thank you. Okay, let's move on. So work in progress. Next slide. So the work in progress we have is that we are working on this third document on the stewardship transition. We have a work party on public suffix lists. We are working on an advisory that is the result of a workshop that we had, that we convened at the Internet Governance Forum, where the topic was specifically private sector services for example, blocking access to services like blacklist for spam and others. Like, what kind of responsibility do these entities have? We talk quite a lot of blocking that states and law enforcement and others are doing, but what about private sector actions? So we had a very good workshop, very good input, so we are trying to, we're looking at summarizing that. Then we have a membership committee that is doing a review of the SAC members. They are in the final days and weeks of finalizing the review of 2014. And then we have the DNSSEC sessions that we are doing in ICANN 51, newcomers yesterday and a large portion of tomorrow as DNSSEC as normal. Next slide, please. The milestones include the SAC 68 that we now published, so we met that milestone. And then we hope that the third and last document is coming out in Q4, together with an advisor on the public suffix list and advisor on the IGF workshop topic. Next slide, please. This means that at this meeting, compared to in London and earlier, we are now looking at starting up new work parties. Next slide, please. And what we have been, and the priorities we have is that we at the moment are specifically looking at two different topic areas based on listening to people, listening in the corridors, listening to you, and otherwise. The first one has to do with the new GTLDs. If it is the case that we're going to do a next round, is some mid-course correction needed? What about, for example, the collision issues? What has happened with the advice that we had given from SAC? Was it correct for us to give the advice? Did the advice result in some action? And did the action actually, in turn, result in some kind of result that was the goal of the whole exercise? And the overall issue, what kind of correction might be needed, if any? So the second one has to do with registrant protection and credential management. Because, as you might be aware of, the number of issues related to parties losing their domain name because of credential, various weaknesses in credential management in reality is increasing enormously. We have already given a few advices where we talk about two-factor authentication, how people should store credentials, and basically talk about what kind of issues there are. Unfortunately, we don't see any much changes in the market. we see instead the number of issues increase. So this, of course, involves registry and specifically registrars, the various issues that exist there. And we will try to, not this time, talk a little bit more about how to resolve the issues, not only what the issues are, because every time we have presentations say, okay, you need to keep track of passwords and don't lose your password database, store everything encrypted, everyone nods and then they just go home and they don't fix it. So we are looking at whether we should say something more, how you do it, to make it a little bit easier to digest. So input is welcome for both of those. Next slide, please. So a few things that that we are asked is, of course, how ESSAC prioritizes new work. We do it ourselves, but we are basing it, we are listening a lot. We have been listening a lot the last couple of months, and that's also what we are trying to do at these meetings. We are, in the prioritization we are doing, we are, of course, have to respond to explicit requests specifically from the board. But if it is, for example, that you would send us a question, in that case, of course, that's an easy way of prioritizing. The more explicit the question is, the easier it is for us to respond to it. How we communicate the work, that is by having meetings like this, and otherwise it's by issuing the reports. So this is one of the things that, for example, for us, and to some degree I hear the similar signals from GAC, is that yes, it is absolutely possible to talk to individual ESSAC members, and I encourage all of you to do so, but ESSAC only say things via the documents and reports, or if it is the case that we also, of course, do have various statements that we have agreed on in ESSAC, but in general, it's the reports that we are using for communicating the work. Next slide, please. Next. So, things that we are listening to all the time are things like, okay, given that we are doing presentations and write these documents, are these publications good enough? Do you like them? Are they long enough? Are they right, just right? What about the executive summaries? Do we choose the right documents to translate? And by the way, both SEC 67 and SEC 68, we have requested translation to 5 other languages, so they will ultimately be there in the 6 UN languages. We have, together with ICANN board, there is an expedited translation requested due to ITU Plenipot in Busan, so the document should be available, translated really as soon as possible, as that meeting is starting next week, right, Marilyn? Yeah. Marilyn knows all these schedule things. So the idea is that you should receive these documents. They should exist in other languages than English as soon as possible. So these are examples of questions that we are happy to listen to you, not only now, but in the corridors. And I would like to end by asking all the ESSAC people in the room, can you stand up, please? Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, stand too.
There you are. Oh, yes, and Mark there at the end and the room as well. So anyways, with that, I open up for, we have maybe, let's see, what time is it? We have 7 minutes, right?
Let me go ahead and take a cue. I see Tony. I see Steve. I'm going to put myself in the queue. Anyone else? Marilyn?
And behind us.
Anybody behind me? Although you have to say your name because I can't see you because you're behind me. All right, and with that, Tony, go ahead.
Thanks, Christina. Well, to start with, Patrick, I have no hesitation in offering feedback from the ISPs. We really appreciate the work that you've done, and we certainly have found it incredibly helpful. The only complaint I have is that there isn't the ability to do twice as much, but otherwise it's excellent. But the question I have for you is that the work that you've gone through here, the work on the IANA functions, I think that's really helpful, and I'm not sure that I should be asking you this question or whether it should go to the IANA coordinating group, but certainly within this group, it's had a wide exposure, and I think probably so for most of ICANN. Are you aware that that information is being circulated to all groups involved in that discussion, and is that an issue for you if it isn't?
I personally have the ability to respond. First of all, for ESSAC, we do try to measure how widespread our reports are. On the other hand, we do think that sometimes our own mechanism of spreading things is a little bit weak, so we actually rely on others helping us by spreading the word. Regarding specifically the coordination group, I do know, as I am a member of that myself and even one of the co-chairs, I do know that both of these documents have been distributed in the coordination group. And then, of course, if the members of the coordination group find that those documents being interested, then I presume that they might carry it further on. As the chair of ESSAC, I also did myself, as we normally do, distribute the report to all the SO and AC chairs to then choose how they are distributing within their constituencies, if at all. But the actual choice for detailed distribution is up to those sort of key people.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve Metalich. Patrick, thank you very much for what is always a very useful and informative presentation. I wanted to ask about the proposed work party on new GTLDs, and I don't know whether you are in a position to give any more detail on the topics that might be addressed. Perhaps that's premature. But I wondered whether consideration might be given as you evaluate the security and stability environment in the new GTLDs, whether you might also look at the feasibility of applying any of the safeguards or techniques that were used in the new GTLDs to the legacy GTLDs. Is that potentially an issue that you might address in that report? Thank you.
So, this is Jim Galvin, and Patrick just asked me to respond to the question. For the moment, I'm the one who's trying to organize the ESSEC members and what we're doing there. So in fairness, it would be a little premature to say exactly what we're going to do because that, you know, the charter is under development and we don't know. It is fair to say that one of the things that we want to do is to review the recommendations and actions that have been taken over the past few years. You know, in a sense, we had kind of a starting point for the process, but clearly it has been modified over time here. We want to go back and look at that and consider what a holistic, you know, new program might look like if you were to put all those things together and consider if there are issues to be examined. We also want to look at recommendations that have been made along the way, some of which from us and some from others, and consider what actions have been taken and give a review of those actions. So past that, it's a little hard to say exactly what we might do, but then this is now an opportunity to remind folks that, you know, ESSEC is always willing to take questions from other groups. So if you have a particular area of concern, especially from within your constituency, you know, please do let us know what those are and send those in. And as Patrick often says, the best kinds of questions are the more specific questions. So the more direct and specific, you know, your concern is that you can ask us about, then we'll take those on board and make that part of our process. I also, you may know, hopefully, right, the GNSO in general is also undertaking a similar kind of task and review. So we're hoping that, you know, we'll be watching that activity and what goes on there and have some discussion with that too. Thanks.
I'm now in the queue. Christina Rosette. This has been extraordinarily helpful, and I will say that I personally find the ESSAC reports extremely user-friendly, particularly for someone like me who has very little technical background. And they're documents that I often forward to others in my firm, clients, depending upon the issue. And the unanimous feedback has been that they're really very, very well done. Jim, just picking up on a statement that you made in terms of to the extent that we have questions, is it the preference that we would send those to Julie and then she'll disseminate those, or is there a primary? Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks.
Just Marilyn? Ordinary administrative process.
Okay, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure they go to the right place. Marilyn?
Thanks, Marilyn Cade. So two questions. One of them may sort of be a comment, but you know, the work, I echo everything my colleagues have said about how much I appreciate the work of the ESSEC. I also note, however, that we're not perhaps within this three, the cross constituency, identifying potential members of the ESSAC and encouraging them to put their names forward. And my personal view is that's probably something we should really be talking more about and understanding better. I know you have a process for receiving names and then making a decision. So that's one comment I would just make. The second comment I would make, though, is there's a tremendous amount of work that is done in the ESSAC that doesn't make it into the reports because it is not agreed to as final consensus positions. And a lot of that work is probably highly informational. But as Patrick, as you said, you communicate through your actual agreed reports. Is the work that you do, which is more at the informational stages, is that publicly available?
No, it's not publicly available, but what we are trying to do is find a way for us to describe